53. The Ark. At 6 p.m. on Sunday, even in the Sharashka, it was time to stop work till the next morning. There was no way of avoiding this tiresome interruption in the prisoners' work, because the free workers would do only one shift on Sundays. It was an odious tradition, but even majors and lieutenant colonels were powerless against it, for they too had no wish to work on Sunday evenings. Only Mamurin, the man in the iron mask, dreaded those empty evenings when the free workers went away, and the Zeks, who, in spite of everything, were in some sense people, were herded into their pens and locked in, and he was left to wander alone through the deserted hallways, past sealed doors, to languish in his cell with washbasin, cabinet, and cot for company. Mamurin had tried hard to get permission for Number 7 to work on Sunday evenings, but he could not overcome the conservatism of the special prison authorities, who did not want to double guards inside the prison. And so it came about that 280 prisoners, flouting all conventional wisdom and regulations, spent Sunday evenings brazenly resting. Their rest was of such a kind that anyone unused to it might have thought it a torment invented by the devil. The darkness outside and the need to be especially vigilant on Sundays made it impossible for the prison staff to arrange exercise periods in the yard or film shows in the big shed. After a year's correspondence with all the higher powers, it was also decided that musical instruments such as the accordion, guitar, balalaika, and harmonica, and a fortiori, those of larger format, were forbidden in the Sharashka, since their combined noise might be useful to prisoners trying to tunnel through the stone foundations. Operations officers were continually trying to find out through informers whether any prisoner had a homemade panpipe or tin whistle, and anyone who played on comb and paper was called into the office and his offence specially recorded. Obviously, there could be no thought of allowing radios or the most pathetic little record player in the prisoners' quarters. True, prisoners were allowed to make use of the prison library, but the special prison had no funds for buying books or a bookcase. They simply appointed Rubin prison librarian. He volunteered, hoping to get his hands on some good books. Presented him with 100 or so dishevelled and collapsing volumes, among them Turgenev's Mumu, Stasov's Letters, and Mommsen's History of Rome, and told him to circulate them among the prisoners. The prisoners had long since read all these books, or had no desire at all to read them, and had to beg reading matter from the female free workers, which provided the operations officers with rewarding opportunities for searches. For their leisure hours, the prisoners had at their disposal 10 rooms in 2 stories, 2 hallways, the upper and the lower, a narrow wooden stairway between the floors, and a bathroom under the stairway. Rest meant that prisoners could, without restriction, lie on their beds, and even sleep if they could drop off in all that hubbub, sit on their beds, or walk around the room or from room to room, wearing nothing but their underclothes if they so wished, smoke as much as they liked in the hallways, argue about politics in the presence of stoolies, and use the bathroom without permission or hindrance. Only those who have spent a long time in jail, relieving themselves twice daily on a word of command, can appreciate this last immortal freedom. What that rest period amounted to was that their time was their own, not the state's, and that was enough to make them regard it as genuine. For the prisoners, a day off meant that the heavy iron doors were locked from the outside, after which no one came in to summon a prisoner or haul him out. For those few short hours, not a sound, not a word, not an image could filter through from the outside world to trouble a man's mind. That was what their day of rest meant. The whole world outside, the universe with all its stars, the planet with its continents, capital cities with their blazing lights. The whole state, with some at their banquets and others working voluntary extra shifts, sank into oblivion, turned into an ocean of darkness barely discernible through the barred windows by the dead yellow half-light from the lights in the prison grounds. Flooded within by the MGB's inextinguishable electric light, the old seminary church was like an ark, with sides 4 bricks and a half thick, floating serenely and aimlessly through that black ocean of human destinies and human errors, leaving behind fading rivulets of light from its portholes. During that Sunday night, the moon might crack in two, new Alps might rear up in the Ukraine, the ocean might swallow Japan, a universal deluge might begin, but the prisoners locked up in the Ark would know nothing of it till the morning roll call. Nor could they be disturbed during those hours by telegrams from relatives, tiresome telephone calls, a child taken ill with diphtheria, or nocturnal arrest. Those who sailed on in the Ark were weightless, and had only weightless thoughts. They were neither hungry nor full. They knew no happiness, and so felt no anxiety about losing it. Their heads were not busy with trivial professional concerns, intrigues, the struggle for promotion. Their shoulders were not burdened with worries about a place to live, fuel, bread, and clothing for their children. Love, which has brought man delight and torment from the beginning of time, could neither thrill nor distress them. Their sentences were so long that not one of them as yet gave any thought to the years after his release. Men of remarkable intelligence, education, and experience of life, they had nonetheless been too devoted to their families to leave much of themselves for their friends. But here they belonged only to their friends. Light from glaring light bulbs, reflected from white ceilings and whitewashed walls, pierced their enlightened heads with thousands of rays. From here, from the Ark, forging confidently ahead through the darkness, the erratically meandering stream of accursed history was clearly visible. Visible in its entirety, as though from an immense height, yet in detail, down to the last pebble on the stream bed, just as though they had plunged into its waves. During those Sunday evening hours, matter and body could be forgotten. The spirit of masculine friendship and philosophy hovered beneath the canvas vault of the ceiling. Perhaps this was the bliss all the philosophers of antiquity had striven in vain to identify.